Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood is brought to you by First Conservative Baptist Church. Now let's get back to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with Matt Schellenberg. Matt served our city on District 6 for 8 years in the City Council, and I'm thankful for his wisdom and for the work that God allowed him to do for our city in those 8 years. I count him as a friend. I go to him often with questions in relationship to some of these constitutional issues and our legislative issues, and I honor his wisdom and his thoughts. Matt, just before the one-minute break for the news, we were talking about some of these issues. Continue your thought on that for just a moment for our listeners.
I think counties can afford this, and a lot of companies actually are moving to $15 already. And the reason why companies are doing this is because they want good quality people working for them. But in big counties and big companies, they can afford to spread that cost over a much higher volume of sales. But in places like Putnam County, Jefferson County, Wilson County, Santa Rosa County, these are poor areas. And those industries, first of all, it doesn't cost a lot more. It costs a lot less to live there. So $15 might very well destroy small businesses at a much rapid rate than what is happening right now. There's a lot of these people are basically trying to survive with the coronavirus. So this is the bad thing. You know, everything has a time to it. And you know what? The legislators should be taking care of this. Yes, has the minimum wage gone up over the last 10, 20, 30 years? The answer is no. However, people are not paying a minimum wage anymore because people aren't working for minimum wage. It is a balance. So companies have the right, and you as an individual have the right to get a great education, use the public schools or charter or whatever system, private or parochial, to get a better education. Because you know what? $15 is still not a living wage, and this is a misnomer that it is.
Well, one of the things that I have said so often, Matt, when it comes to that, some of these geniuses in their so-called sense of wisdom that they feel they have, if $15 is not enough, if $12 is not enough, why don't we just call it $50, $100? Where's the limit to that? And again, it goes back to a fundamental position that I've taken and as you have taken, that these are legislative responsibilities and ought not to be just by fiat added to the Constitution and make it poured in concrete that cannot be altered or changed for the present or for the long-term future. And you touched on just a moment ago in your discussion about that, with a person being able to go to the schools, get an education, et cetera, that caused me to think very briefly on the subject of one of the things that's on the referenda for the ballot on November the 3rd for the Vaughan County is the 1/2 cent sales tax increase, 1/2 cent sales tax for the purpose of supposedly the education. In fact, the referenda says school capital outlay sales surtax to improve safety and the learning environment. Speak to that issue, Matt, for our listeners. Should we add a 1/2 cent sales tax on the citizens to supposedly repair, upgrade the buildings? In fact, the referenda wording says, to upgrade aging schools through repairs and modernization, to keep schools safe, and to continue to provide a conducive learning environment, to improve technology, and to replace existing or build new built school buildings, and share the charter schools for their allowable uses, shall the Duval County School Board be authorized to levy a 15-year 1/2 cent sales surtax with expenditures based upon the surtax capital outlay plan and monitored by an independent citizens committee. It's almost laughable to me, but speak to that issue. You're very, very familiar with it, and our listeners need to be educated on that subject.
Okay, let me just touch on two highlights that I just think are just laughable. Number one is they already have the school board. Look at the quality of school board members. Would you, first of all, the school board budget's $1.7 billion. It's a half a billion dollars more than the city council's budget, and we have 19 city council people looking at that budget. And then we have seven people on the school board. And would you hire any of them to oversee that budget? Well, apparently what they're not doing is actually challenging the supervisor of education, Diane Greene, because there's $108 million in your real estate taxes, ad valorem taxes, that are designated specifically for repair and maintenance of schools. And so when Warren Jones came out last year and said, I only have $500,000 for air conditioning, that's a bold-faced lie. So all they have to do is look at the budget and challenge the supervisor of education, Diane Greene, and say, hey, how is this money being spent? Well, it's not being spent on repairs and maintenance because about $35 million was transferred from this account to the general fund. It wasn't used for repair and maintenance. So we have to look at it. Are we trusting this school board to do the right thing? So what they did is they have a committee of 24 people. Now, Dr. Greene, how many committees are you on that have 24 people? None that I'm aware of.
Even
JEA, almost all the independent authorities we have are seven people. You know why? They can get things done. With 24, you get nothing done. And that's exactly what they want. They want it to be a quagmire. So no big decisions are going to come out of there. And, of course, they want to soft shoe everything. And so they go, we need somebody from this department with this expertise. How much time do people have in their private life to spend with 24 other people to debate how to spend 1.7, the half-cent sales tax? One other thing that's really detrimental, this is a progressive tax. It goes on the poor much more severe than the middle class and the wealthy. It impacts the poorer people. Do we really need two new schools? And one of the five things they mentioned is they're going to consolidate schools. Why do you need a half cent to consolidate schools? You don't need to do it. Just say we're going to consolidate schools and move forward. And even at that point, for the last several years, Rebalt and Reins, they've been wanting to, they don't have the political will, and this is Warren Jones and all the other six of them. They don't have the political will to put those two together. They're a mile and a half away from one another. Why do we have two high schools that are a mile and a half together? You know why? Because they want to keep their identity. Why don't we put them both in one school and put one wing Reins and one wing Rebalt, and we can go and you can basically still have the differential between the two schools. This is the problem with the school board is they're thinking backwards and not looking at challenges going forward. This pandemic has moved from people going to school brick and mortar, which I think is the most important, to a third of the students' parents are opting for visual. And by the way, do you need more schools if a third of the population is visual going forward? No. And one other thing I might add, by the way, everybody talks about St. John's County, Clay County, they all have impact fees. You know why? Because their student population is growing. We have not grown for 10 to 20 years. Our student body in public schools has basically been the same for that many years. So would you want an impact fee when you're not growing? We're not growing because people in Duval County are moving here, are moving to St. John's County because of neighborhood schools and the quality overall education.
Absolutely. And when you look at the big picture of that, as I have used the term for several months now, probably the silver lining out of the dark cloud called COVID-19 is the fact that families have discovered there are alternatives to the brick-and-mortar school, as you've just mentioned, and that is the online learning, the parochial school, Christian school, private school, charter schools, etc. In fact, some of the surveys that I've seen on a national level is that as high as 62% of the parents are seeking something other than the brick-and-mortar schools. And yet here we are at the very point where there's that point of demarcation in the educational system and the modality of the educational deliverance system, the delivery of the academics, and yet they're trying to force on the citizens a half-cent sales tax. I'm looking at the headlines of the Florida Times Union just September the 18th. Sales tax campaign raises $1.35 million. And it talks about those are the movers and shakers in our city that's dumping mega dollars. And some of the previous mayors, Lenny Curry being the present mayor, and some of the previous ones, and Jaguars owner, and Wayne Weaver, and Dolores Weaver, et cetera, et cetera. The deep-pocketed folks in our city have the sense that somehow, some way, they need to kick this off. They've already raised $1.35 million. Just to promote and to advertise and to push the referendum that's on the ballot for November the 3rd. That should tell us, anytime I see that, it tells me that there's something beyond just the desire to have a better building. This article says, I think the real issue is nobody is opposing it, and that really is what's going on to allow this to pass. That was a statement by one of those in this article. That since there's nobody opposing it, there's no organized group opposing it, therefore it must be all right, and we can push it through. And I think it's egregious when we find that there's going to be that levy of a half-cent sales tax for some, and once it goes on, it never comes off. It's supposedly a 15-year aggressive surtax, but once it goes on, it never comes off. What other thoughts do you have in relationship to that? So the bottom line is, Matt, should we tell the listeners, say no on the referendum to increase your taxes, sales tax, by half cent? Is that a wise thought in your opinion?
I think that we should say no for a couple reasons. Number one, a $1.7 billion budget. When's the last time they did a full audit? They haven't done it in 5 or 10 years. If you could just save 1% of that $1.7 billion, that's $17 million, 2%, 34, and you get the point. The point is, these people, the board is not challenging Diane Greene on how she's spending the money. And she's not spending it very well, because there was an article in the paper the other day talking about some, I don't know how many students, they're not getting the computer so they can actually go online and take classes. And if you have 2 or 3 children in the public school and you only have one computer, well, how does that work for the other 2 children? And this is going to be detrimental, not to the parents that are middle and upper income, because they're always going to have the ability maybe to work around their schedule, white collar work, but the lower end is going to fall further behind, because even if you get a computer, it's possible the parents don't have the ability to understand what's going on to help the child going forward. It is a terrible situation that we have with the leadership of the school system. And by the way, think of it this way. Last year, Lori Hershey promised the charter school people that she would vote if this half-cent pass, that the charters would get part of that money. And you know what? She lied to them, because she voted against it. She was determining that vote, and she voted against them. So you know what the charter people did? They went to Tallahassee. And any sales tax dealing with this issue, a certain percentage of that money will automatically go to the charter schools. And by the way, that sounds like a good idea. One of the big charter schools that's going to be coming to Jacksonville is called Idea. And you know where they're going to build the schools? In the Northwest Quadrant, which is all the problems that everybody says they're having. And I asked them, why are you moving there? Because that's the need, and that's what our mission is. And I'm thinking, so why are you going there? How are you going to do this? He goes, Matt, there's opportunity there, neighborhood schools. We are going to make it happen that these children will have actually an opportunity not to go to public schools, not to be bused to the better schools if there's opening, but we want them to stay close. We want the parents' participation, and that's exactly what you want. You want the children to have neighborhood schools, so when they go home, the parents can go to their after-school activities. All this is important. It's not important to build new schools. It's important to have good schools so the parents can be there for the children at all times.
Absolutely. And Matt, one of the things that, generally speaking, the National Educational Association and the teachers' unions rail against the charter schools and talk about them taking money away from the public schools. Charter school is a privately owned public school. And a charter school, you're familiar with this, I'm sure, a charter school will receive 66% of each dollar that is going to the public school. A charter school receives only, charter school doesn't get 100 cents on the dollar. 66 cents on the dollar is all they get. And yet a charter school produces a higher quality academic program for that student than the general brick and mortar public school has ever done. And this is the reason so many families choose the charter schools or the private schools, parochial or Christian schools, or the homeschooling, is because of the quality of the education that's being sought. And we're not finding that in Duval County with our public school system, and yet we're talking about adding a half-cent sales tax. I find it egregious, and so I'm in agreement with you, Matt, that we need to say no on that referenda on the ballot on November the 3rd.
Matt, let's go to the teachers itself. They always complain that they're having a turnover all the time. I was a board member of a Bishop County High School for 24 years. We never had the turnover. You know why? Because the administration respected the teachers, and we had good teachers. We have more people that wanted to be teachers at Bishop County, and obviously I'm familiar with other parochial schools in the area. We didn't have a problem retaining teachers. And by the way, we didn't pay as well as Duval County's. Our benefits weren't as good. And you know why? Because they love the environment in which they were, and everybody recognized that. And the same situation with private schools and charter schools. There's a certain amount of respect, looking forward to going to class. There's no discipline problems in these situations. There's no discipline problems, by the way, probably in Stanton, Paxson, Douglas Anderson. You know why? Because people want to get in there, and parents know it, students know it. So is there a little bit of discipline problems? Of course they are. But if you do really poorly, you're going to be sent out into the hinterlands to other schools that are not as good. And so why is it their schools always academically do well? It's because they are selective, and basically they're like charter private schools in Duval County.
That's right. In fact, the charter schools, contrary to the general public school, and a charter school, again, let me remind our listeners, is a privately owned public school. And in that charter school system, they produce a higher academic student than in the general public schools, even though they get less money. But in a charter school, a principal administrator can remove a student, and it's almost an impossibility to do so in the general public school arena. Matt, there's two or three other things that I would like for us to touch on.
Can I just say one other thing about this?
Go ahead.
And Mandarin, we haven't had a new school in Mandarin, not counting Atlantic Coast. And you know why? Because we have more charter schools in Mandarin than any other section of Duval County. And the reason is parents are recognizing Duval County schools are not where they want to be. Go ahead.
And yet we're wanting to dump another half-cent sales tax into the kitty, and it'd be wasted, my opinion, wasted as a result of the teachers' unions and how they are absolutely eviscerating our public school system in Duval County. But, Matt, there's another thought. You know, we've got in the city of Jacksonville, our mayor, by fiat, issued an executive order, and it's not a mandate. Most people are not aware of that. The masquerade, as I call it, is not a mandate, but a recommendation. It's not enforceable by law. Law enforcement cannot go out and force you to put a mask on. But as a result of that masquerade, it now continues without any abatement, where there's no end to the executive order. And one of the things that I have found, and I cannot recall the state, there's a state, only one state in America, where if an executive order is passed by mayor or governor, it's good for 28 days. At the end of 28 days, if it's to be renewed, it must be renewed and approved by either a city council, if it's a community thing, or by the state legislative body to make it a law. What are your thoughts in relationship to it? I've talked with two of our state legislators about the potential of introducing legislation next year that would require any mayor that issues an executive order. That executive order would be good for 28 days, maybe 30 days. If it's to be extended beyond that, it's got to take legislative approval. Because what we're finding is, for example, the mayor governor in Michigan, Governor Whitmer, has issued 111 executive orders in the past 7 months. So there's got to be an end. What are your thoughts as a former legislator for our county? What are your thoughts on that being a potential of city council issuing, coming up with the legislation, something like that? Or the DeVol delegation being asked to introduce legislation like that? What would be your stance or your position on that?
Interesting enough, I think that there's a certain amount of reason that after 28 days, the mayor should explain to us why we're still in that issue. And by the way, you are a minister in a church. Can you? I don't understand, and this is a tangential. Why is it that the government can tell you to basically shut down your service, and then they say you can do it to 25% or 50? I think that what we're going to see is citizens are going to basically start ignoring some of these things. It's sort of like prohibition. Even though everybody said no drinking, people didn't stop drinking. They went ahead and did it no matter what, and again, and ultimately it was abolished. But if you keep on doing this to citizens, they're going to start basically saying, I don't know what you're talking about, I'm just going to ignore you. And that is what's going to happen if the mayor doesn't come out and explain why he has the executive order in place. But basically, I think that he's afraid of people. He's afraid of being challenged. And this is what you get. You get a lame-duck mayor, and he's got 3 years to go. And I think the citizens of Duval County City Council and Duval legislators should all get together and say, hey, I understand that it sounds like a good idea, but at the end of 28 days, if you don't give us a good reason why we should continue doing something, right or wrong, then you cannot extend it any beyond the 28 days.
Absolutely. I'm in full agreement with that. And you touched on that with the closing of the churches. Of course, we've never obeyed any mandate to close the church doors. That counters anything that's called the Bible. And Dr. Right. John MacArthur, as you know, out in California, said that as a church, we need to obey Christ and not Caesar. And yet they're persecuting and prosecuting Christians all over the state of California, 32 counties that controls about 80% of the churches in California are still now keeping the churches locked down. And there are thousands and thousands of churches across America that are locked down. And according to the George Barna report, multitudes of them, in fact, Barna report says 2 out of 5 of these churches may never open again because of the shutdown that's ordered by the government. I think that's egregious. In fact, William Barr has already said it is antithetical to the Constitution to try to modify the First Amendment and say that the pandemic or some virus or pathogen can control our Bill of Rights and the First Amendment in particular. But yet that's being ignored by multitudes of governors and mayors across America. I'm thankful for Governor DeSantis and his position on that. In fact, he said that he's not going to do a mask mandate, but leaving it up to some of the mayors. And then in our city, the mayor has now come out with this mask mandate. And most of the people that's following that, as I've called them, they're sheeple and not people, because they're simply blindly following it, not realizing that a mask makes about a 40% reduction in oxygen intake for the physicality of the individual. And even the OSHA website, Matt, you may be familiar with this, the OSHA website says the very best mask will not prevent the pathogen. The pathogen is 0.1 micron, and the smallest openings in a mask is 3 microns. And so can a 0.1 micron go through a 3 micron opening? Yes. OSHA website said it's like putting a chain link fence on your face to keep the mosquitoes out. And that gives a pretty good picture. That gives a pretty good picture of what the mask does. It does no good as far as benefiting the pathogen transmission, but it destroys the health of the individual wearing it. So I'm in agreement with that. I believe we need to have some type of legislation, but in talking with our present city council, I don't find anybody that's interested in countering the mayor. We have basically today, and I say this very openly, we have today a weak city council, contrary to when you were on. We had those that were staunch conservatives that would take a stand on issues that would stand for we the people, but I don't see that anymore in our city. And I think we need to go to the state level to get something done. But jumping from that quickly for the last few minutes of our broadcast, we have a major, major, major tectonic change that is available to us on the Supreme Court with the appointment of a new federal justice for the Supreme Court. Tell me your thoughts and your opinions on where we are. Should the president go ahead and appoint one before the election? And if he does not, what are the potential hazards if there's a lockup, as I call it, with the vote and the major number of the ballots? In fact, speak to our listeners about the fiasco that we're faced with as a result of the mail-in ballots. And along with that, what do you think about the replacement of Ruth Bader Ginsburg with the president's appointment authority?
But let's go to the ballots. This is a bizarro world. Every state has their own way in which doing this. And recently, Pennsylvania said that any ballot is received 12 days after the election is still counted. How does this work for our society that we do not know, with all the technology we have, that we cannot get people to actually vote and get it on time by November 2nd? This is not, the military might be the exception to this rule, but to say that you didn't know or you had to wait until 12 days after to vote and get your ballot in, I think is anathema to democracy. Second of all, people talk about what's going on with Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And by the way, she is not the first time this has ever happened in the fourth year of any president. So when all the people are talking over here, Schumer and Pelosi, they're just basically noise. Everybody that has actually looked into it, there's 17 other times that this has happened.
Yes.
11 other times it actually yes. voted. And it was Carter, I know, is it Carter or Clinton? I can't remember. That Ruth Bader Ginsburg was actually nominated to the appellate court or the district court during this same period. Yes, excuse me. It was Carter, and then Clinton.
Carter.
Actually put it
yes.
on Supreme Court. So
yes.
I think that the actual noise that you're hearing, it's probably motivating both parties. But the Constitution says appointment can be made and the Senate can be voted on any time to get the majority of 51 votes. I am surprised that Romney finally spoke up and said he would be glad to vote. Collins and Mikulski out of Alaska Republicans, they're in a tight race, and maybe this might make the difference. But I'll leave it with the citizens with one thing. I hope President Trump wins, but if Biden wins, we need to retain the Senate, and otherwise it will be a disaster for the Constitution of the United States.
Absolutely. Matt, I believe you would agree with me. As believers, we need to pray and ask God to intervene and give us victory on November the 3rd in such an overwhelming way that it casts aside any shadow of doubt as to the number of votes and the Electoral College votes in particular, that we have a clear, concise win on November the 3rd. Matt, thank you so much today, and God bless you for taking the time for us to have this discussion. I pray that it's a benefit and a blessing to our listeners, and I pray that we continue to look up and lift up our heads, for the Scripture says our redemption draweth nigh. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us. Looking forward to meeting you next time on the air as once again we face the issues.
Located just 1 mile south of I-295, you are invited to worship with them. 9:30 a.m. Sunday for Bible study, 10:45 a.m. Sunday morning worship service, 7 p.m. Sunday evening worship service, or 7 p.m. Wednesday fellowship meal Bible study. Prayer, Bible Q&A, and updates on issues facing our city, state, and country. Tune in again for another Let's Face the Issues broadcast. Also tune in the same station Saturday mornings at 9 for expository Bible preaching by Dr. Youngblood. Remember, a rebroadcast of this program can be heard every evening, 9 p.m. on 100.3 FM. Tune in and invite others to listen.